Você aperta. Oh. I got some power I didn't have before. Okay, is that too loud? We test it? Okay, we'll test it. Okay. Thank you, Caroline, for setting this up. And thank you all for coming on a Saturday night. It means if everyone comes on a Saturday night, it means one of two things. Either you've got nothing better to do with your life, or you're really interested in the topic. It was a joke, by the way. All right. is a really exciting one, and it's an area where we have the rare opportunity of studying a somewhat relatively closed system. Organizational systems aren't closed, but they're relatively closed in that they're impacted by very large groups outside of them. And do many people know about the whole idea of triple bottom line? There's a lot of ideas around triple bottom line coming out in organizational or business systems. And the idea is that the bottom line, or the bottom line of a balance sheet, or the profit and loss statement, is how much or loss you receive during the year. And triple bottom line means that not only are you looking at that, the financial bottom line, but people are also looking at the bottom line in terms of the environment. Looking at the bottom line in terms of stakeholders, and stakeholders, shareholders, in that stakeholders are a larger community that impacts and can allow an organization to succeed or not, independent of how much money they have in the organization. Not surprising that you get organizations like Philip Morris talking about Toyota television. It was Subaru or Toyota, one of the, is this better?
That one's cutting out.
Is it cutting out? Okay, no problem. All right, now I need this so people can hear on the audio. Is that correct? All right. Turn this one off now. I actually don't like this one.
Oh, okay.
I'm happy. Hold on, let me get it out of here. Thanks. No problem. Okay. All right, I'm going to hold this one. So, did anyone see, I think it was a car manufacturer, what was it? It was Subaru. The ad that they have of their latest factory that is in a wilderness refuge. And then in the middle of all these cars that are polluting the world, you see a deer. Did anyone see that? You see a deer come up. And the deer comes up, and then Subaru says, we not only care about reducing the emissions on our cars, but we care about the environment, and it's no surprise that our plant is in the middle of a reserve, a nature reserve. And I thought, what they're aware of in that ad, they're aware of the stakeholders, the larger community that purchases their cars, and also what's happening is the bottom line is influenced directly by the whole environment and how people view the organization itself. So expanding bottom line becomes really important. It's exciting in terms of process work because suddenly we begin to look at fields in a different way, and that a field has roles which are evident, and it also has ghost roles, those fields which are outside and not as evident but impact the organizational system itself. So as I continue this discussion tonight, is how many people here are not all that familiar with process work? Few people. Okay, so what I'm going to do is try and watch my jargon. And if I do marginalize you, please let me know. That's good for me. So the whole idea of fields in process work is the idea that in a group, for example, our group, this is like a field, this environment we're in, and some of the roles or positions in this field are known, and some are more invisible. So, for example, without me asking, I could create a marginalization of a role that is not familiar with process work by using terminology. So that's in our field. So in the larger field, in, for example, for Subaru, the larger field in their ads, they're aware, is those people who care about the environment. And if they don't market in that way, it becomes detrimental to their profitability. In terms of process work, what I think is really exciting about process work and change. Oh, let me tell you what we're going to do tonight. Is that helpful? Before I keep just going off here. I thought I'd like to present for a little while, maybe about 3/4 an hour or so. Is that tolerable? Okay. I know, Tom. Tom has been training me. I'd like to present for about 3/4 an hour or so, and then I want to open to the group and have some discussion and just have some interchange and questions and answers, ideas from the group. What's important is that we're all learning together. And for me, organization, the focus on businesses and organizational systems that focus either on nonprofit status or profitability, I think is a relatively new area in process work. We've only been doing it really in a focused way the last 6 or 7 years. We have worked a lot with group facilitation over the last 15 or 16 years and world change. But in terms of focusing on organizational systems as a group, I think the focus has really been strongly quite recently. So it's a new field, and it's exciting because I think we offer a whole lot to the field. And a number of years ago, I went to chat to a woman. I got interested in organizations, and I went to chat to a friend of mine who's a really well-known organizational consultant. And I said, I want to work with organizations. And she said to me, I said, what do I need to learn? And she said to me, you already know it. And I said, no, come on, tell me. I got to get in there. You already know systems. She says, Stephen, it's just how you frame the information. So those people who are familiar with process work, what's exciting is that a lot of the model is easily transferable. And I thought tonight I wanted to chat about how we can transfer some of the knowledge that is present in process work into organizational systems. And I've got a couple of ideas, new ideas around what I've been experimenting with. But essentially, what I'm going to be doing is sharing some of the applications in organizations. And it's exciting how translatable it is. In terms of what we have to offer organizations, we've got a lot. I think one of the most exciting things for me in terms of process work is that it's a very transformative model when we look at fairly rapid and quick change processes. So in process work, when we have a look at a primary or a usual identity and a secondary or an emerging identity, the whole idea of focusing on the emerging identity in the moment is really a rapid and fast change process. So although processes and integrating change takes time, in process work, we're looking at fairly quick transitions. And organizations like quick fixes. And so we actually match organizational systems really well in that we don't need to take years and years and years to pick up some of the change processes. The other thing that I think we're exceptional at is our awareness of interpersonal communication and power dynamics, rank dynamics. I was with an organization recently, and they brought in another consultant, and they'd asked me to facilitate a meeting where the consultant presented their results. And so I was in the meeting and watched what the consultant did. And this guy apparently had a lot of experience, and I thought his awareness, communication-wise, wasn't all that strong. And I thought his rank awareness was very complex. And I was surprised because I thought it's such a powerful area, and yet in process work we have so much knowledge about it that I thought is really exciting to apply. So the sensitivity that we have to power dynamics and the importance of rank and how we use rank in process work is just a wonderful tool. A couple of other tools are awareness of edges. I'm going to watch the way I use terminology, so I'm going to explain it. Edges are like boundaries between a usual identity and an emerging identity. And the edge is like the barrier or the boundary, and it's the mechanism by which we identify change processes within ourselves and within systems. Our awareness of edges is also fantastic, so it's a really useful thing to bring into organizations. Another one that I've, sorry, Katya, yeah. Why don't we, what should, how should we do it? It's, what does the group think? I'm just humming away. Should we just take questions as we go? Well, I'll put everyone to, I'm sorry? I mightn't finish. I probably won't finish in any case. Should we take questions? It makes it a more dynamic evening. Should we do that? Was there, to catch it, did you have a question or? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Shall I repeat the question? So the question was, when I saw the consultant and they were not conscious of their rank, how I perceived that, and...
Just as a way to show more the lack of something on his mm-hmm. side, and maybe how we might do it, we meaning, or what process work might bring mm-hmm. differently.
Well, what I noticed as a consultant, that he came in and he showed a poster that he found on a board that the organization has, and he showed the poster to the group and said, this is terrible. Whoever put this poster up should immediately be fired. Very interesting. Yeah, it was kind of, it was a conflictual poster, but his idea was that the person should be fired. And I thought it was really interesting, the strength of his view. And at that moment, he was sitting next to a senior person in the organization. And it wasn't about checking whether how the organization dealt with that kind of issue and the complexity of it, which is how we would work with it. But it was a very direct, this is how things should happen. So he was coming in with a degree of authority, knowledge of how systems should be, and he was going to impose it on the system. Not conscious that in a way by doing that, not only was he taking a very strong position on a view in the organization, but he was also taking the power position, saying, I'm a consultant and therefore I know more than in fact all the significant people in the organization that are present here, nor the wisdom in the organization itself. Whereas we would come in and be aware of how we use our rank and positional authority in the group. Yeah. Good. That was one of those issues. And so it sounds obvious, but it's actually not. And many people who come in as change agents feel they have to come and give the information they have and their views. So our awareness of dynamics and cultivating dynamics and the understanding of diversity and the importance of that is really a big thing for organizations. Yeah. we've got a couple of other really good things. In terms of role theory, remember I talked about the field, the idea that certain positions get marginalized is a really big thing. Most groups, when we work in many, many groups that I work in, a lot of problems occur because they don't know how to deal with all the symptoms and problems in the organization. They know they're there, but they're not quite sure why. So, for example, when people start leaving, when folks get sick, when there's lower productivity, when there's conflict that's happening, most organizational systems don't know how to deal with that. That's not their level of expertise. They're into making a profit or they're into following a vision for the organization. So some of the skills we have in working with those issues are really, really helpful. And in particular, the one that I'm thinking of is the idea of marginalized roles and the value that if there is a role in an organization, translated, if there are people in the organization that are marginalized, or put on the side, their values or ideas aren't acknowledged, they tend to come back and disturb the organizational system. And I think we learn that everywhere. So those are a couple of ideas around how process work has been helpful in organizational systems. I wanted to share about, is there any questions so far? How are we doing? Okay. Is it okay? Am I going too fast, slow? Everything is doing good. All right. Thank you, Tom. Okay. Okay. I wanted to, when I go into a system, there's a number of things that I try and keep in mind around working with organizational systems. The first thing is how to deal with gossip in a system, and also our roles involved in terms of gossip. For me, when I go into an organizational system, whether I like it or not, I'm now part of the system itself. It's very hard to go into a system and try and stay separate from it. You're immediately impacted by the system, and it's very, very subtle. So, for example, even if I walk into the organization, say someone employs me, often when you go into a system, you're employed by someone who has some power. So I walk into a meeting, and I'm walking in with, say, the executive director of an organization. Everyone notices my affiliation, and whether I like it or not, I'm now working for this person. And so people associate me with that kind of power. And if I walk in with that person, they no longer trust that I'm going to be able to support their needs too. And I need to be aware of that. And I remember once when I was working, I'm trying to protect all these organizations I work with. And so I won't tell you anything about the actual dynamics, but I might refer to certain organizations that I have worked with. Is that okay? I try and keep it broad that way, because I have to look after organizations. They're like people. If you start gossiping about it, then they somehow get to hear about that. So I walked into one organization I was working with, and someone came up and whispered. I try and get spies. Whenever I work with organizations, I try and get spies. And the spies are people who I go to before I go in and chat to and develop relationships with. And I say, what's happening? What's going on? And I try and get all the gossip I can, because I know that the more gossip I have and the more informed I am, the better off I'm going to be in terms of facilitating that organization. So I develop as many personal relationships as I can. The deal, though, in those organizational systems is I'm like totally, totally confidential about anything they tell me. I use it, but it's never divulged, nor even do people know that someone has told me that, unless I have their permission. Yeah.
Does it matter where the spies are in terms of the power they have in the organization? That is, do the people with less power have more information, or just different information? Or how do you choose your spies?
I try and get whatever spies I can. But mostly the spies are like in the range in the organization. I'm really interested in people who have less power in organizations, because mostly they will be more impacted and more conscious of the impact of decisions than those people who are making the decisions themselves. So I try and get as much as I can, and frequently, because when you come in as a consultant, you're coming in, you don't come in from the bottom. You frequently come in at least from the middle of the organization, and depending where you go, you have to negotiate up and down. So because you're coming in at the middle, I really want to watch the people below where I come in, because they're going to have information that's really important about how the organization is operating, and frequently their happiness and how the organization deals with them will be critical to the effectiveness of my work. So I like spies all over, actually. And frequently I'll chat to people all over the organizational system. I wanted to talk about actually working upwards in a moment around spying also, and how to get up. I don't usually use the word spy, but it's the most appropriate one, actually. So someone came up to me and said to me, I was about to facilitate a group, and they said to me that there's gossip in the organization saying that I'm in the president's pockets. Now, this is one of the biggest traps as an organizational consultant. Organizations pay consultants well, and the payment is dual. Consultants well. I shouldn't say this is going to get taped, but one of the problems of paying people well is you want to keep your job. And so you get easily caught into the system structures. It's very, very challenging, and it's tricky. So meaning if you get paid well, did you follow? Okay. So what happens is if I'm employed by an organization and they're paying me well, I want to keep my job. The people that are paying me are usually the people that have more power. Therefore, I want to appease them. Now, that might not always be what's going on in the organization, and sometimes they need to hear things they might not like to hear. So I'm now at a development stage or an edge because I need to go and approach them about stuff that might be tricky, and I might lose my job for that. That's always the challenge and the dilemma of being a consultant. Yeah. So should I just come finish the story? So this person comes up to me and they say to me, Stephen, I heard this gossip that you're in the president's pockets. Translated, basically you only do what the president of the organization says because they pay you. And I was about to facilitate a huge section of the organization, about 100 people. And I thought, if that's in the air, we should bring it out. So I started the group by saying it was a pleasure to be there. And then I said to them, I heard some gossip that folks believe I'm in the president's pockets. And I want to let you know that's really important for me. And if I am, I'm no good to you. And I'm not going to be help your group anymore. So please check me out. If you feel that I'm biased in any way whatsoever, let me know. If I can't pick it up, fire me. I'm going to be no good for you anymore. Anyway, that was the end of that issue. But it was about really becoming transparent and saying, if this is the case and you see me in a biased way, I need to wake up to that. And if you feel that, you might be right, but help me with it. And if I can't grow, I'm no good for you. This kind of gossip is really, really important because you're already in the system itself. We always think we're separate coming in, but just by affiliations, our nuances, and everything else, we're part of the organizational system itself. Katya, did you have a question or no? Okay. So that's a really important thing. The other thing is that the wonderful thing and the terrible thing about organizations is that they're changing all the time. So what looks like the plan is, you suddenly find isn't anymore. And you might still be facilitating in the organization or consulting, and yet the person that you were working directly with no longer works for the organization, was now in a new department, or there's someone new that comes in. And I'm fascinated. I'm actually having a study at the moment where a very large organization is interested in changing a whole region of the way the organization works, and I'm helping with that change process. And every time I try and initiate the change process, there's different people in the group. Like the significant players are different. The heads of departments have changed. And so we have a meeting, we develop a really strong bond of all the heads of the sections, and then next time I want to meet with them, they're not there anymore. And so I realized that the change process that we're working with is undermined by the higher level in the organization. And so what I've realized is I can't do this change process without discussing with the higher levels who actually are probably in conflict. So what I'm doing is I'm busy putting in a proposal for some change work with them, and I'm actually strongly recommending that I go up a number of levels in the organization, so that I can actually work with those people above who would like the change to occur and recognize how the change might not happen if they continue to work in certain ways with the group below them. That was my phone, but I think it went away. That's good. Can everyone see that? So it's like the freedom to really recognize that in order to impact change, we might need to work down in the organization in terms of gossip, but also recognize that if certain sections of the organization aren't working well because you have that directive to approach them and really work with them, no matter how big the organization is. So this particular organization is a huge organization, and they're really high-level people that I'm going to be working with. Massive organization. And it's important that I approach them And now I have to talk to the person who's employing me and then work towards their boss and their boss above them. Hey, sure, yeah.
How do you work with large numbers of people? You know,
how big?
You say massive, 100? So, what's the thought? We do group process here. We see who's around, but don't see who's around at all.
You can actually feel the impact. So, for example, in this system, I'm working with about 100 people in a change process. But if I go up in the organization, it's thousands and thousands. And then above them is so it's a really big organization system. And if you're lucky, you can get nice systems like 150 people and you can bring them all into the room together. And I've done that. And that's really fun because then you can get a remarkable dynamic where the people that you think are monsters are in the room with you and you really see that they're people. And that sometimes happens with boards. For example, I brought a board in and the president in and then the gardener is in the room too. And then the gardener is always gossiping about the board. But when you see people, it changes. Or if you address them or you express your concerns and they actually respond well, it suddenly creates an incredible integrity within the organizational system. And that was a remarkable meeting. And that group hadn't met with the board for 10 years. And so the meeting with the board was such a significant event. And from that meeting, the whole relationship changed. And in fact, the board began to bridge from that meeting into the organization so that members of the organization started representing the members on the board itself. So it changed its whole system from that. So in a small system, that's easy. If you get into really big systems, you feel it by the impact of the system. So for example, with this one group that I'm working with about 100 people, and then I notice that we can't get it together because of all the changes that are happening above, then I have to go and work with those folks above it. I haven't worked with groups larger than about 150, except of course for World Work, which is 300, but that's not really an organization. It is. It's its own unique organizational form, yeah. But 100 people is very easy to work with our models. Basically, our group model, you can work very easily with 100. And mostly when I do that, I don't need a facilitator personally. But of course, if you work with two people, it's nice. So the thing with change is that as things change, what's exciting is you can see the consequences of change and you can see how the structure is working with that and whether it works or not. So for example, in this organization, all of these changes gave me an idea that actually the approach I was going to use in the change process wasn't going to work and I had to work higher up in the organization. The other thing, of course, is another idea that can I just keep talking? Is that okay? We just bounce back. And if you have questions, we'll just, is this a useful way of focusing? Okay, we're doing okay. So in terms of another thing I'm really aware of is whoever hires me, you got to look after them. That's really important. And yet if you only look after them, that's a problem too. And so sometimes I've been in situations where the person who hires me gets fired. And I want to give some suggestions around that. It happens more frequently than you'd like to know. I'm not going to tell anyone. I still have a reputation that if you hire me, you get fired. But what sometimes happens is that someone pulls you into an organization. They have a vision for change, and they bring you in. They hire you, and then suddenly they withdraw. And so what I've learned from consulting is that building relationships not only with the person that hires you, but with a broad spectrum of folks is really, really important. And it's often surprising when that person leaves who backs you up. So in one organization I was working with, the person who hired me left in the middle of a huge change process we were involved in. And what happened is the person below her actually called me up and said, "Don't worry, I'm going to represent you really strongly." And what I knew is when I knew this person was leaving, I worked with a whole team. And because of the strength of the direction of the team, the new boss who came in had to support the project. It's very interesting. So if you get a whole team flowing, they can deal with big changes in it just by the strength of the team moving on. And so the team was moving with it. The boss thought, what is going on here? Let's drop this project. And they said, no, they wanted to continue it. So just watching how you affiliate, how you work with people is really important. Yeah, another thing that's really important is the concept in process work of deep democracy, the sense of being open to the diversity of all the various views in the room. And there was nothing like a deep democracy with one organization. I was about to have a meeting, and they knew it was going to be a hot one. And one of the managers came up to me, and he was a very outspoken guy. And he said to me, Stephen, he said, you're about to facilitate the meeting? And I said, yes. He said, don't F this one up. That was his message to me. He said, don't F this one up, because if you do, I'm watching you. And I said, okay. I'll try and support. What he was saying is that don't repress voices that want to come out that aren't quite going along with the scene. He knew they were going to come out. And so he went to me and said, you know, I'm watching you. If you screw this, I'm going to be on your back, so don't do it. And there was a really clear message of if you aren't deeply democratic in an organization, people will help you to become more democratic. I did good, actually. I went to him afterwards. I said, how did I do? He said, you did good. But I knew I had to. And my personal response is actually, personally, if people challenge me, I actually rise to the occasion. We all have to work out how we work with that dynamic. But when a group gets heavy for me, I actually feel better, because then the strength of the issues comes out and I feel relieved. So when he said that to me, I felt the pressing on me actually raised me up. So it made me more aware. A couple of other things. I can't say how important preparation is. It's, I think, the most important thing. I remember going into one organization and they'd asked me to facilitate a 5-day training for their staff of about 80 people or so. And I said I needed to talk to a lot of people before I came in. And I spoke to about 20 people. And I want to know what they thought needs to happen in the meeting, what the issues were in the organization, stuff like that. And I remember walking in, and the first message from folks is, we think it's going to be a good meeting. And I said, why? And they said, because no one else has ever spoken to 20 people before we walked in. So really doing our homework, speaking to a lot of people, getting an idea of what's in the field is really critical, very, very important to successfully facilitating and consulting. And then, of course, all the other things are useful. The sense of being aware of polarities, supporting all the sides, watching for the marginalized voices and helping bring them out is really important. And critically, typically in organizations, marginalized voices often revolve around rank. So if someone has power in an organization to fire you, there's a tendency not to tell them something they don't want to hear. There's a whole rank scene that comes down on folks. So you get this rank power scene that comes down, and then people get quiet. And being aware of that is really important. And some of the simplest exercises in going to organizations are to tell the people in power, how about we open up to feedback and see how you're doing with those who have less power than you. And often if there's a lot of gossip, I remember going to one organization, there was a lot of gossip about the head, and folks were saying we can't approach them, maybe they're too quick and they don't listen to me enough. And then I said to them, how about listening to feedback? And he said, okay, I'll do that. And the result was a fantastic meeting, because for the first time folks felt they could open up and they could be heard. And then I helped the manager hear what was going on and grow from it. And by the end of the meeting, they were able actually to resolve in 10 minutes at the end of, we had a 2-day meeting, 10 minutes at the end of the meeting, they were able to resolve an issue that they couldn't do in focusing only on that issue for 3 days in a previous meeting. So if you begin to address some of the dynamics in the group, people become much more open to each other and can resolve very, very complex issues very quickly. especially if those dynamics aren't there. So when I work with groups, there's a tendency not to work on the business level first, but the emotional and issue level first. If you can deal with some of that emotional stuff, decisions are much easier. Any questions so far? Yeah, Jennifer. Sure.
How much do you address the everyday issues that that organization is trying to solve, as opposed to working with the dynamics in the background, the feelings, the roles, and the communication? Do you know what I'm separating?
Totally. Well, it depends what you come in as a consultant. So, for example, my work as a consultant is with people. So that's where my expertise are. They're with people, and they're with change processes. And so I'm interested in the people aspect of the change process. So if they're interested in getting dynamics about how to market more in an organization, I'm happy to pick that up in terms of the dynamics of why it might not succeed between people. But I'll say I need a marketing expert for that. So my topic is around the dynamics and interpersonal interactions between people. Is that okay? Yeah. Great. So I keep really focused on that's what I do. That's where my expertise are. Knowing that if those dynamics are good frequently, problems that are irresolvable can actually get addressed. Okay. Should I just keep talking for a few more minutes? Okay, when you start falling asleep, we should put the music on or something. Okay, I'll keep going. A couple of things that are fun to look at. Issues like organizational charts. Organizational charts are really interesting because you can actually see in an organization when you go in, and maybe Jennifer, this is in addition to your question, that when I go into an organization, there's certain things that are good to know about, like how the organization works. So if, for example, I go into an organization and I go in because there's a manager who's highly stressed, and I talk to them and I look at their system and I find out they've got 19 direct reports, people that report directly to them. It's too many. So often you'll find problems within the organizational structure itself. So if, for example, we take the Process Work Institute, one of the challenges we have, like every other educational institute, is we have two basic structures. We have an administrative structure and we have a training or program structure. And so administration is designed to support the programs, the training. And those tensions are typical in almost every educational organization. If you get a head of the organization who's a heavy-duty administrator, they start streamlining programs or making decisions based on finance and not based on the vision of the program directive. And so you'll frequently see these problems happen in organizations, and you'll see them swing between one direction and another. So one organizational system I work with, it's interesting to watch what they do. They decided they needed to do more outreach, and so they got a president in the organization that was very outreach-oriented and really supported bringing money into the organization and getting the organization known more globally. And that worked great. But his business acumen wasn't all that good. He wasn't such a good business guy. So eventually he left, and then they got this incredible business person. Now, the beauty of this outreach guy is he really supported the academics and the program. Suddenly they got this business guy, and he says, hey, you know, why don't we develop this new program? This is going to make us a lot of money. So his value was on programs to make money rather than the whole organizational vision, which was around the development of education of a specific direction. So you can see these challenges occurring, and they're often reflected in the organizational chart. So if you see someone has a lot of direct reports, if you find that there's certain tensions in the organization, it's frequently because they're playing out some of the issues that structurally aren't that useful. Yeah. Yeah. How many? Well, the theory says 5 or 6. Let's say 5 or 6 is as much as you should go to. Yeah, you know, some people, there's variations. I mean, the idea that we're all the same or all organizational systems are the same are not accurate. But I've found a lot of organizations work on the 5-6 principle. Once you start getting over that, there are too many people, there's too many meetings, there's too much distraction, and you stop being effective. And then it begins to look like you're the problem. If it's not recognized that this the organizational system and the chart itself is the problem. The other thing that's fun with charts is that there's an invisible or ghost chart in organizations. Almost all organizations have a ghost chart. Like, for example, if we had a look at our organization, the Process Work Institute, I would imagine that's a I'm going to draw it, and I'll describe it for those people who only have audio. Okay. So if you imagine our organization, the top of the organization is a board. We've got a board of folks who really have control of the organization. And then below them is me, the CEO, president of the organization. And then we have a director of training, and we have a head administrator. We don't have a very complex organizational chart, and that's basically it. Okay, now what's interesting is you begin to ask yourselves a question. So we have under the administration, of course, we have a bunch of people that work there, and then under the directive training, we have a whole lot of faculty that work directly for them. So those are the basic system that we have. Now, there's a couple of things that we're missing in the system. So if I was consulting with our system, I'd say, what do you do in terms of outreach, marketing? And I imagine it would be a ghost. Have you noticed? We don't do a whole lot in that area. Now, we're learning. For example, Caroline was saying, next time we've got this fantastic collaboration. So we're really learning as an institute that we need to go out and work with other groups. It's a revolutionary thought. So we have a ghost around we have a ghost around marketing and outreach. So just by looking at our organizational chart, we can begin to see some of the areas that we need to develop. The other thing that's really interesting is that we also are a founder-based nonprofit. And so Arnold and Amy Mandel are somehow in the power structure but not visible in this organizational chart. So the power of the Mandels in this chart are really, really important. Can everyone see that? And will impact the whole structure even though they're not visibly there. Similarly, we have a very, very strong teaching body. Has anyone noticed? We got a whole bunch of very strong teachers, and they have a huge impact on the organizational direction without necessarily being part of the chart. Now, about a year ago, we decided to go through quite a big change process. And the whole idea was, until then, we had pretty much a teaching body directing everything. And we decided to have a CEO who really would have the rank. And so we started that change, and we started focusing on that. And I thought, great, we've changed. You see, you forget everything when you're working in an organization. So I thought, great, we can have a CEO, we've changed, we now agreed to a structure, and we're going to execute it. Except I forgot about the teaching body momentarily until they reminded me they were there. And in part also I forgot about Arnie and Amy momentarily until I remembered we probably need them. So this was part of the learning that happens in an organization when you have these invisible agents that are impacting the organization hugely, and the organization has to work to deal with them. Yeah.
Do you consider the students and the consumers?
Uh-oh. They're still ghosts. Let's keep going. See, that's a hot spot. You see how bad that is? Okay, there's a whole group here. How's that? By the way, I'm making it very big to compensate for my mission. The whole student body is huge. And consumers are also huge. So consumers also going to be really huge. And there's going to be other groups also that are really important. Stakeholders are larger than the specific area. Like what we've learned over a number of years is the state of Oregon is also a really big factor. What happened at one point in time, we were somewhat independent, and then we cultivated master's degrees, and the state has a huge impact on the direction of where we go now. Yeah, thank you for reminding me before I get into more trouble than I know, right? Okay. Can everyone see how charts are complex? And there's one chart which looks like it's the visible chart of an organization, and picking up the goals or the secondary chart of the organization are really important, and how people deal with these invisible positions in the organizational system are really important. Yeah, catch it, yeah.
My question is, would you also consider, because we have kind of a dual focus in our training programs of education and therapy, that the other roles that are present, like the faculty are also therapists, the students are also clients, and not only that, but do you think of that as ghost roles as well, or...?
Absolutely, they're really important. So you'd have, you know, we got a very complex thing. We'd have clients. We also have a strong community base. So the larger community is really big, and there's therapists here. So we have all of these dynamics that are occurring. So it's very complex. Once you start opening all of these dynamics up, they're very, very complex as to how we address some of the dynamics that occur. That's great.
Are you saying that those people need to be brought into the structural organization of it, or are you happy to just leave them out there as ghosts?
Well,
and what's the effect of leaving them in the ghost position or ghostish position?
Should I tell you my learning over the last year? What happened is when you get into a position, you kind of lose your consciousness, your awareness. And so what happened is I realized, great, we're going to go there. Let's move in a certain direction. And in going in a certain direction, I thought, this is how amazing you are. I kind of forgot about everyone. And then they reminded me. And sometimes people remind you well, and sometimes people remind you badly. And the first time, it's very interesting because if I study myself, it's much easier to consult than run an organization. So if you have the options, consult. But, I can beat myself up for it, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to have fun with it with you. But essentially, it's amazing because as you come in, often you're really inspired by directions. So I felt when I came into my role, I felt I'm really excited. We can actually change some things. I felt we really needed to change for years. So I went ahead and said, let's move and change certain things. And then I noticed that the teaching body weren't always smiling at me. They weren't so happy. And then I felt, why are you getting in my way? And it's very interesting because if you look at the research on change processes, one of the biggest reasons change processes don't work is because people, change gets stopped by the resistances to change. And in process work, we're so good there. We have so much awareness of edge figures, the figures or the beliefs, attitudes, and values that are at the boundary of the change process that stop the change. And really looking at the complexity of dynamics which result in the resistances and the prevention of change are huge. So initially, I had this idea of let's just move ahead and then the teaching body will just naturally fall into line. Wasn't that clever? Then I noticed that the teaching body wasn't quite falling into line, and then I felt, why are they just resisting the change? I couldn't understand that they actually had a point of view. And then I thought, let me work on myself. And I thought, let me see what's going on. And I realized that the resistances were coming because in the change process itself also needed to integrate much of the wisdom and the knowledge that we have in the teaching body. And as we began to shift that, and I think we have shifted that a lot, I've tried to remedy some of the mistakes I made. And that would include also to some part. Because I didn't see it. They were invisible to me. And so I'm growing. And what I realized actually for me in my role in this particular organization is I think the more I can hold an awareness principle of the diversity of interests and balance them and move the organization, holding the whole diversity, the better I'm going to be in that role. Rather than having a sense that one or another role is right or wrong in terms of direction. You haven't? I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm. Are you going to change the green structure, the hard structure again to bring in these other parts? Or is it just through awareness that you figure that?
I think the hard structure is just for whatever reason an organizational chart form. But these other things operate irrespective of what you think the form is. And so they're already operating and impacting. In fact, many of them are actually much stronger than the green structure. So the idea is for me more an awareness structure than to say this is really how an organization operates. Yeah.
But wouldn't you say actually that the red structure has been kind of more incorporated into the green structure because of all the formalized committees and things that have been built up with both sides, the student side and the teaching side?
Yes.
There has been, you have made, you know, like I don't want to sell you short here, you've made a lot of effort to actually make structural adjustments with that awareness of what's been left out.
Yeah, right. But what happens is eventually you kind of grow. So I have. I made a lot of awareness changes and stuff like that to integrate many of these things. They're still not in the formal green structure, but they're impacting and work with hugely. So you get lots of committees and groups. And in fact, what I realize is that just having a new form, for example, a bus direction, is not useful in itself by itself. It actually has to pick up the whole community aspect of the system. So it's trying to have both. And the freedom I think that we have now is that the change was that now we have both a boss and a freedom to work with the community. And so certain decisions are made, which are really then supported if it works with the awareness of all the inputs that are there. Yeah, it's very complicated, I must say. I'm still learning. I'd like to say it's all over, but I'm not sure it is.
So my question's still related to what you're just talking about. I don't know much about organizations and organizational structures, but I do know from a background in mediation that when there's a sticking point, it's usually because of what they call invisible stakeholders. And so when I look at the red, that's what I think of as the invisible stakeholders, because they're not outlined in a linear way for anybody to see when they look at what is this organization. And so my question is, from your experience with organizations, is it typical to have so much red and so little green? Or are we unusual in that way because process work is more of like a process-oriented thing rather than a linear thing?
I think most organizations would like to only have green. And I think the more I get to know organizations, I think we're doing pretty good. I mean, some of them have more complex organizational charts in terms of green, but there's huge dynamics and huge interplays and huge politics in so many organizational systems. And the larger the system, the more complex they are. And the question is how deep you can go into some of those green, red complexities to bring them in. So some of the organizations I'm working at the moment, what I'm realizing is just simply working with this within this green structure doesn't work because all of these other factors will undermine the change process itself. And so I'm needing to go to some of the others that are invisible but incredibly impactful of the system.
So, Stephen, this is where your spy system comes in handy, right?
My spy system.
Absolutely.
You'd never hear about the raid if it hadn't been for the spies.
That's right. I want the spies. Yeah. I have to hear the spies, and then I also have to see, as I begin to approach the organizational system, what the impacts are. And so as I'm aware of the impacts of the system itself, I can begin to say, wow, that problem is coming up, rather than think it's a problem in the way. So one of the ways we view resistances in process work is that resistances are important messages in the change process itself, rather than things to be overcome in order to change. So initially what I thought was, when I came in, we need a boss. We've had a community-based decision-making system. We need a boss who makes the decisions. It's going to get much more clear and effective. And then people started complaining, and I thought, why are they resisting? They should stop resisting. They've agreed to the system. Just shut up and let me do it. It didn't work so good, right? And that's because within the resistance itself is incredibly vital information which is needed for the effective change process to occur, rather than viewing it, which is almost exclusively how it's viewed in change processes, that the resistances are problems to be got rid of so we can change. And I think that's the fantastic thing about our model, actually, that within the disturbance itself, within the resistance itself, within the problem itself, are vital aspects of the change process.
I have one more question for you, Stephen. So now you've been on both sides. You're a consultant, and you are CEO.
Right.
So is it easier as a consultant to see the red more easily and more quickly than it is.
That's why we get paid.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, the deal is, if you go into a system, when you become too much part of the system, you're not useful anymore, because you start missing out and the red starts fading away, and you start just seeing the clear structures that really are where the CEO, the president, or the director of training, or whoever you're working for, is in. So the beauty of being a consultant is you're able to step away and look at the system, and you can address certain things that are much harder, even if people have awareness of stuff in the system. And I have to say, being in this position, you just lose it. And it's incredibly hard work to actually do these jobs well. None of us are trained to be effective in management positions. Yeah. Yasmin, yeah.
An example of what you were talking about, where the resistance or the resistances are the key thing often to the change process, the disturbances.
Yeah, well, let's give an example of the Process Work Institute. You know, one of the reasons it's nice to refer back is that it's not an organization that I feel I'm betraying by talking about. So there's many other examples that I have that I have to keep them kind of weird and vague. So let's use this one. For example, what I noticed is we got a direction, and that's what we want to go in it. And then someone said, no, they don't like that direction. And I said, stop resisting. This is what we're going to do now. You said this is our job. Now keep quiet and let me do it. And then they resisted more, until eventually I got that what they were saying was really, really important. And that actually, you see, I had an idea that we were just going to go where there was now a boss who was going to make decisions. And actually what I realize is that it's much more complex, that at times it's good to make the decisions, but we have a whole community that will resist me if I start doing that. Have you noticed anyone inside the community? So if I try and do it, it doesn't work so well. So inside, within the resistance itself, are important voices that then I would bring out and be heard. I can give you another example. Shall I give you another one? Okay. I'll give you another example, a really specific one in an organization. So I go into an organization, and I find that there's someone who's irritated with a manager. And this person had just got fired. And the policy of this organization is that if you fire someone, they still stay on for a few weeks. And most organizations don't like the impact of that, so they just asked them to leave. But this organization, they stayed on, and they came to my meeting. And they were angry with their boss for being fired, because they felt the reason they were fired is that they were outspoken. And the whole organizational system at that point in time was in somewhat of an authoritarian basis. that there was a boss and this is how things happened. If you didn't listen to them and you were in their bad books, and you might leave. And people were afraid of speaking up because they might get fired. And so suddenly this resistance came up, and this guy stood up to the boss and said, "I'm angry. I feel I'm leaving because I was outspoken." And the boss actually stood on the other side of the discussion and said, "That's not the case." And then many folks were watching. There were a lot of people in the room. And eventually the boss apologized and said, "You know, I made a bad decision on that one. And that shouldn't happen in our organization." And then his boss, who was a new person in the organization, said, "In this organization, let me guarantee you, no one will ever get fired while I'm here for being outspoken. If you have a view, I want to hear it." And then the whole system changed. So what happened is, in the resistance itself, was something which was really vital for the organization. They needed to change from too much of an autocratic system to one that was prepared to take input and difference in the system. Is that okay, Yasmin? Yeah, great.
Stephen?
Actually, what happened with him specifically is he didn't get rehired, actually, but they did leave an opening for him too if he wanted to. It was quite significant, but he was leaving. He was leaving the area. And he'd chosen to leave and move, and he didn't want to reopen that one. Yeah.
Is this on?
Yeah, it's on.
Sometimes leaders or chiefs are selected to do make the hard decisions. Uh-huh. You know, that a board doesn't maybe want to make. And I'm wondering what if you were the consultant, if you were able to consult with that organization, what you would say to the board?
Of an organization where they send in hatchet people, right?
Essentially, yeah.
They send in someone as a hatchet.
Not necessarily to fire people,
mm-hmm.
but to do things that they know will be unpopular.
Mm-hmm. If I was working with that board, you see, there's something about alienating your members from yourselves. And one of the biggest problems that I've seen with organizations is that those people who hire up that no one ever sees, they begin to dislike. Have you noticed that? Board members are not always the favorite people of members of an organization. And I think it's because they get alienated because of that kind of process. So if they come in with a change process, like they feel they want to initiate change, one of the biggest things that I've noticed in order for effective change to occur is to get buy-in from the group. So if I'm working with a change process, I want to work really hard at the beginning to find out why not change, what are the problems of change, and getting some of the resistances rather than just coming and saying, "Here is a change and we're going to do it." Most of those change processes, research shows, I think, 75 or 80% of change processes don't work. And I think that's one of the reasons they don't work, is if you don't get buy-in, boy, I got to tell you, there's terrorism has many forms. And undermining changes is extravagantly good. People are very good at it in organizations. So if it's top-down and it just comes in as a force, frequently the person who comes in often, if they bring in hatchet people, often short-term people, they come in to create the change and then they leave, because they're not well represented in the organization. And it can be efficient, but it's not always caring for folks. And unfortunately, a lot of organizations are like that. You know, the truth is, the work that I'm doing, fortunately at the moment, is for organizations where I feel good about. And I think as a consultant, I just want to add in something for a moment. As a consultant, it's really important to find out what an organization is employing you for. Because else you get set up. Sometimes organizations want to look good, and so they employ you for something, knowing it's not going to work, but to demonstrate that at least they're doing something about it. So before I go into system, I'll be with you in a second, Tom. Before I go into system, I want to make sure that I feel comfortable with what's happening. And if I don't like something that I'm asked to do, I say no. Or I want to discuss it further to see how it can be done in a more useful way. So I remember once going into a group to work on diversity, and the organization wasn't really interested in diversity change. It was much more interested in showing that it was doing something about diversity. And I felt coming out. I felt used. You know, I felt like I didn't like the feeling I had. And although the group was good, I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere. So those kind of things are really important to catch.
Yeah. Can I go? Sorry. sorry, many questions.
Sure.
I want to ask about how to use the ghost chart. Like, it looks like the preparations for the facilitator or CEO or somebody who wants to work on, or if you feel needed, you might share that with the people you're working with. So how would you like to use, could you be more specific?
Well, I can talk personally that as the president, when I know that this is these are powerful groups that I need to deal with, the more I'm aware of these groups, the more they become more conscious in me. Although they're not part of the formal chart, I'm really conscious about how I work with them. So, for example, the state of Oregon, I talk to them weekly, monthly. I'm constantly talking to them. I say, you know, I've got this decision. What should I do about it? And they love us. But a number of years ago, I never spoke to them. So they came to remind us that they exist. And they became quite stringent because of that. So as I'm aware of these systems and how they impact the organization, I need to begin to talk to them to see how they're doing. So can I give an example? Phyllis, can I mention something about our discussion the other day? I bumped into Phyllis for a minute, and Phyllis said to me, she was chatting to someone, she said, hey, are you part of the new, Phyllis is a student in the program, as well as many, many other things. She's a remarkable community member. But Phyllis was, I bumped into Phyllis, and she said she's not changing to one of the new trainings we have. And she said, you know how many people there are? I think we've got 26. 23. Right. And I thought, this is important. And I realized that in the change process, we're in danger of marginalizing those students who are not changing in the program. So I heard that, and I emailed Phyllis, and I said, this is very important. Are we doing enough? And you said some of the things that we're doing. And I said, I want to remember that. It's really important for me. So as I stay conscious of all of these powerful forces, I'm able to utilize and work with them really carefully. Does that make sense? They're important, and they can destroy organizations, actually.
Yes, you said one of the strengths of process work is that it can work quickly when organizations like that. Because I've read certain cultural changes in businesses can take 3, 4, 5 years to really get embedded. Do you know the research, and how would you say your experience or what you know about process work relates to whatever we would consider significant cultural change that some consultants say takes up to 5 years to really embed in the culture?
I think we're both right. I can give you an example. I'm working with a cultural change at the moment where, remember that story which I mentioned about the person who got fired? So that same organization, it had a culture where people were afraid if they spoke out, they would get fired. And there was a somewhat autocratic culture, and they decided to come in and create a change process around having a much more democratic culture, where people could actually be heard, and that the community aspect of the organization was wanted to be better. And that's been going on for about 3 years, and that particular process still happens, but it's 1,000 times less strong. And so what happens is, in moments I've seen, when I've been working with that group, one person will stand up and confront, for example, the executive director of the organization, and everyone else watches, and they learn from that. And then in another moment, the executive director will come back and say, but now I also understand for something, and have a deep engagement with someone in the group. So that cultural change has been happening over time, and yet the specific momentary change happens in the moment. So what I found is true in both ways, that actually you can change very quickly, but to integrate that change sometimes takes time. So I think both are right, actually. And there's one organization that's in the beginning of a big change process that I'm involved with, and I said to them, I want 3 years. And they said, we can only contract for this year. And I said, I got to tell you, don't give me 3 years, it's not going to work. Because I know what's going to happen is we'll start the change, and then these blue things are going to come up like crazy. And we've got to work with them, and we've got to work dynamically with it. And I'd prefer not to do the work than to do it badly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
It's about the sustainability of the change. Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't just go and work once or with an organization or how, and if you do go and work once, how do you help them to make the change more sustainable?
Well, I can tell you, let me see if I can, how I can frame it, because I'm just going to say the very opposite. See, nothing is ever true. It's just the point of view. So I'm going to say the very opposite of what I just told Tom for me. And that was, I went into an organization only once, and I had a 2.5-hour meeting, and I wanted to design it in a way that doesn't identify the organization. It was an educational organization, and there was a very diverse staff. And because of the nature of the program, the staff came from another country. So there was this whole group of people that had come from another country, and of course they were extremely well educated in their country of origin, but because they came to the United States, their English wasn't very good. And so they felt terribly misunderstood and very marginalized, and yet highly educated and very knowledgeable. And I had a meeting where this group of people who'd come from another country and folks that were from the United States. And there was a lot of tension in this group, and they asked me to facilitate a meeting. And in the group, I recognized that these folks from this other country were marginalized and weren't really acknowledged or respected by this group. And so I brought that out. I brought out the marginalized voice, and it was a beautiful process because initially I brought it out, and then those people from that other country said, yeah, we feel that. And they came out, and then at one point in time, it got too strong. And one of those members said, I'm happy to bring out my marginalization, but I also want to remember my power. And I'm a powerful person. I have a lot of knowledge, so do all of us. And they worked with the internal marginalization they suffered from. And I heard about 9 months later, they were still talking about that process. So sometimes you can create huge changes just by one intervention into the system too. So that's the opposite of what I just told you, Tom. Yeah. 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 Shandik, yeah. Yes, yes.
Sometimes it's like becoming a doctor, an organization wants to become a doctor, there's like so many trainings that it might take some years before it does actually change. Another one may be, I just want to change from a Subaru to a Ferrari. That may happen in the spot, unless you, then you have to deal with all the fears of driving faster and all that stuff.
But yes.
The technical part can be really quick, and some others, the technical part, the whole changes of processes are just technical, may take such a long time that you have to face all those resistance.
That's really important, that when we're looking at the change process, we're looking a lot at the people aspect of change and not some of the technical aspects and the implications of that which you're talking to too. Yeah.
Any other questions? How are we doing? Has everyone still got some energy? Are we doing okay? Yeah? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, going back to that thing that you said earlier about one person having like 5 or 6 people that report to,
right,
or 14, mm-hmm. I think, whatever your example mm-hmm. was. I'm looking at the board and I see like, okay, you're the CEO on this. This mm-hmm. is a little personal and also trying to make it a little general.
Sure.
I see 12 different things right there. All of those are coming in as input, not necessarily as
right.
a reporting, like
that's right.
within the green thing. So is that saying like you're overloaded?
No.
Or is that
yeah.
not? What I'm getting at is it's like
you're saying you're the CEO and as a person right
there, mm-hmm. in wherever it is, mm-hmm. and then you look at the whole
body of what comes
out in red, whatever.
Sure.
Now all of that is, in a sense, reporting. And mm-hmm. if there's one person or several, whatever mm-hmm. it is,
That's a lot of input.
It's a lot of input. Actually, I'll tell you my secret. What I did is when I took this job, I spoke to my director of training, and I said to her, Julie Diamond, I said to Julie, what do you think? She said, you should do it. I said, only if you become the director of training. Mm-hmm. She said to me, I'm too busy. I said, you got it, baby, so am I. So we got to decide what we want to do. I said, the potential is great for the school, but I won't do it without you. And so the idea was to get, when Julie got in, she deals with a bunch of these issues. Do you know what I mean? So maybe she has too many red dots. essentially what you got to do is really see which group deals with what. Now, if I start dealing with every issue of the teaching body, that's not going to work. So as the director of training begins to deal with a whole bunch, the student body, the teaching body, some of the consumers, it frees me up to some of the other mechanisms that are really important. Like, for example, the state of Oregon, marketing and outreach, the building, the administration function that I'm working with. So although this is one of the lines, I've only got five or six then.
Right, I see that now, but I guess the way I was looking at it was all of your red lines went to the CEO spot.
Yeah, we should change that for sure.
So
yeah, that's important, yeah. On the board there? Yeah, you've got students there and consumers over here, yeah. In the board of directors, yeah, we learned. So we have a student representative on the board. We also have on the board a number of people from different organizations. Like we have people from a radio organization, New Dimensions Radio. We have a guy from Esalen Institute on our board, the president there. And we have the president of an organization in Portland, the Institute of Intercultural Communication. So we've tried to get somewhat of an outreach structure influencing both community as well as students and some aspect of assisting us with some of the areas we're weak on the board. You know, we didn't cover everything, but we're trying. Mm-hmm. Any more questions? I have more notes, but I think it's enough. Huh? Don't you think?
Great.
Okay, thank you everyone for hanging in there with me. I'll stay behind if there's any other questions. Huh? My notes, I'll tell you really quickly what I had that I didn't talk about. Nothing. Nothing that's ready. We covered a lot of other different stuff, so. We're good. Okay, thank you, everyone. Thanks. Thanks, Caroline.
That was really interesting. Thank you all very much.